Welcome to Studio 2 Solstice Edition. I'm Avi Wolfman Arend.
And I'm Cherry Gregg on this winter solstice. I love that, Avi. This is our last live show of 2023. Can you believe that? I know.
Oh my gosh.
So much has happened.
Where did the time go?
And coming up this hour, we're talking about the man himself. Who, you ask? Pope Francis, and his decision to allow priests to bless same-sex couples. That has stirred controversy this week, and it's not the first time he's been in the spotlight.
Yes, there have been some changes to the church under his decade-long papacy, and they have inspired, we'll say kindly, mixed reactions.
Mm-hmm.
We want your reaction. What do you think? Email studio2@whyy.org or give us a call. The number, listen carefully, 888-477-9499.
And in a few minutes, we'll talk with State Representative Jordan Harris about two new criminal justice reform bills that take aim at the probation system and also expand clean slate rules in the state. And later this hour, we get to hear from some super cool high schoolers as they share their top stories of 2023. And now for our top story of the day, are you going to be a part of the millions? You just heard NPR talk about it, the millions and millions of people that will be traveling this holiday season. Just so you know, over a million people will be traveling through Philadelphia International Airport this
holiday season. It's a lot of people.
It's a lot of folks. And the exact amount, according to the PHL blog post, is 1,092,100 travelers. They'll pass through the airport.
Specific estimate.
Specific. They'll pass through the airport between today and January 3rd. This is a 13.8% increase over last year.
All right.
If you want to know the busiest days,
sure.
The 22nd,
got
the 26th,
it.
And 27th, and on those days, you have anywhere from 83 to 85,000 people traveling through the airport.
Wow.
One day.
I'm shocked. I'm stunned. People are traveling
mm-hmm.
for Christmas. Next thing, you tell me they're going to put trees in their houses and have presents under them and then festive meals?
That's right.
Okay. Let's talk about some traditions, some Christmas traditions.
Sounds good.
Asha Prihar from Billy Penn has a story up right now about how Philly plays a part in some winter holiday history.
Mm-hmm.
Here's one, for instance. The poinsettia. You see them all over the place this time of year.
I have a few in the house.
They are named after a guy named Joel Roberts Poinsett, who was a very early American diplomat to Mexico. He sent some clippings, because the plant is native to Mexico, sent some clippings up to Bartram's Garden in Philadelphia, and then they were displayed at a flower show in Philadelphia, and that's kind of how they caught on and became the Christmas plant here in America. Okay, so that's one connection.
Mm-hmm.
O Little Town of Bethlehem
started
as a poem before it was a song. Written by a guy named Philip Brooks, an Episcopal priest who was in Philly at the time at a church on Rittenhouse Square. So that's number two. Number three, Rabbi Abraham Shemtov and four other men are thought to be the first people to ever light a Hanukkah menorah on public property in front of Independence Hall. That happened in 1974. And finally, Perkasie, Bucks County, hosts, they claim, the oldest tree lighting ceremony in America. There you go. Four great connections to holiday traditions in our region. Thank you, Asha Prihar, for enlightening us.
I love that Billy Penn story. And it's kind of cool. Philadelphia and our region is always on the forefront of history, being the first on so many levels. And why shouldn't the holidays be part of that? So
They should be.
Yeah.
And they are.
And they are. So go ahead.
Okay.
Kudos to our region. A little bit more serious story is about Rite Aid. Yeah. So Rite Aid is now
the
banned.
Yeah.
The pharmacy. You've probably seen them all around. We've been talking about them.
Philadelphia-based, by the way.
Yeah. Well, Rite Aid is now banned from using facial recognition technology for 5 years. Now, y'all may not have even known that they were using it.
I was
and there's
not
a
aware.
There's probably some reasons for that. Rite Aid had been using facial recognition to identify customers who may have been engaged in shoplifting or other problematic behavior. The images, they took them from security cameras, employee phone cameras, and news stories. And many of these were very poor quality. Well, the facial recognition technology, which came from a third party, they falsely flagged some customers. And when I say some, I'm talking about thousands of false
to the FTC,
positives.
Right?
This is according to the Federal Trade Commission.
Yeah.
And it subjected customers to embarrassment, harassment, and other harm. And so someone complained, and The Federal Trade Commission came down pretty hard. They said that the Rite Aid failed to inform customers that they were using this technology.
A five-year ban, right?
Yeah, five-year ban. They also claimed that they didn't train workers properly on the use and that false positives were possible.
And it dated back to 2012. I didn't even know they had this technology in 2012.
And now the FTC says they have to do a lot of things to make things right.
Interesting. I'm curious if governments are going to start to regulate this type of technology. Mm-hmm. Maine, I believe, has a law around it. New York City has some regulations around it. But Rite Aid is like not the only store that's using this stuff. It's just the way they were using it. They got dinged for that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think
they didn't tell people.
Yeah, no disclosure. Interesting, though. I mean, I think it's a frontier to watch moving forward. How many stores use this stuff? How do they use it? And what's the response from government and consumer groups?
Yeah, and I just imagine being flagged, told that you were of shop. I'm like, what?
Can't you use your face right now to get in the Phillies game, I think? I mean, that's a very different use of the technology, but it's popping up everywhere.
It's popping up everywhere.
We want to do one more holiday story.
Yes.
And this is a little more serious. So despite all the holiday cheer and festivities, a lot of people struggle with stress, depression, and loneliness this time of year.
Mm-hmm.
And last week, the Pennsylvania Department of Education launched a hotline called the You've Got a Friend in Pennsylvania Hotline. It's an automated phone number that you can call anytime to hear a pre-recorded pep talk or joke from Pennsylvania students. Here is a sample of the joke portal.
Where do pencils go on vacation? Pennsylvania.
Why did the chicken cross the road? To get to the outside.
What kind of clock does a pigeon have?
A cuckoo clock.
The delivery on those jokes was really good, by the way. The first one, that sort of flat Pennsylvania to indicate that it's like a kind of a dad joke. Mm-hmm. I appreciated that. But the serious part of this is that it's supposed to be just sort of something you can lean on if you need it during the holiday season, because a lot of people do feel a sense of loneliness this time of year. The number is 717-772-4737, and there are various menu options you can go through if you want to hear some of those pre-recorded messages from our youth.
Yeah, and they do make you smile, right? And it's nice that people are trying different ways of keeping people's spirits high. So I say pay attention to your feelings. These are some of the recommendations from the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. Pay attention to your feelings. Mm-hmm. Develop a plan if you feel stressed out. And you can always contact 988, the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline, or by texting 988 for immediate help.
Yeah, so remember 988. That's always out there. And that's not specific to the holidays. 988.
And so now we're going to move into our newsmaker portion of this segment. Last week at the National Constitution Center, Governor Josh Shapiro, standing beside rapper Meek Mill, signed two criminal justice reform bills, Bill 838, that's probation reform legislation, and he also signed a clean slate bill. You may remember that Meek Mill became a leading advocate for probation reform after he was sentenced to a 2 to 4 year prison sentence for violating his probation back in 2017.
We try to be better, but they labeled us felons, sent us back to jail. I had to fight against that the whole time to gain my respect and be who I am today. And I'm proud of that.
Now, supporters of Bill 838 say it will have a profound impact on hundreds of thousands of people trapped in the probation system by reducing probation lengths and limiting prison time for technical violations. But there are critics. Some 50 organizations opposed it, including the ACLU, who argued that this legislation will make probation worse. Democratic State Representative Jordan Harris, who serves part of Philadelphia, has been instrumental in both of these bills, and he's with us in studio. Tell us more about what these laws will do for people in the criminal justice system and to respond to some of the criticism. Jordan, it's nice to see you. Welcome to Studio 2.
Thanks so much for having me. Good to see you as well. Good to see you both. I mean, you know, we have seen Pennsylvania move in the right direction with regards to criminal justice reform over the last decade. And both of these bills take a significant step forward. One, clean slate.
Can we talk about clean slate first, actually, before we get to 838?
Sure.
So this clean slate law, this is basically about when a charge can be sealed from public view.
Yes.
And this update makes it so certain nonviolent drug crimes can now be sealed after a certain period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you all focus on that category of crime
when I first got elected and I started working on these pieces of legislation, we passed Clean Slate the first time over 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And when we passed it, it did not include felonies. And I remember going home to my community, and while people celebrated what we had done, many of them said it didn't go far enough and it wouldn't help, significant parts of the community. Clean Slate, as it is before the governor signed the expansion, had already sealed 45 plus million criminal records in the state and helped more than a million folks. But what we understood then and still understand is that felonies were a major issue. I promised then, and I delivered on that promise, that we would go back and get felonies. What we've seen in the opioid crisis and what we saw prior to that with the war on drugs was that it was really a war on people, and that far too many people were seeing their lives dashed or saw opportunities unobtainable because of drugs and drug felonies.
Opportunities like housing. I mean, what type of opportunities?
Housing is one, because of federal regulations and some state stuff, as well as there's certain areas in professional life. We have lots of professional licenses that folks were ineligible for mm-hmm. because of these records. And then, I mean, you had people couldn't go to, class trips with their children because of some of these crimes, as well as just simple employment. What we call Clean Slate 3.0, this is the third iteration of the Clean Slate law that we've gotten done, covers those drug felonies and provides a second chance for those who have proved themselves worthy of such.
And some of this is automatic. Mm-hmm. Talk about the necessary some of the things that the automatic nature of some of this sealing, what it does for people.
Yeah, so when we first did record sealing in general, it wasn't automatic. You needed to go to court and get a petition and petition the court to do it. And what we noticed was, one, most folks couldn't afford it, and two, it was hard getting people to understand that this was actually out there. So the whole thing about Clean Slate and why it's a national model is because it's the first of its kind with automatic record sealing. So once you hit the threshold for the time period, mm-hmm. once you've paid your court costs and fines, it automatically happens. Every month.
No hoops to jump through.
Every month there's a list of folks. It's sent to AOPC, which is the ones who manage the records, and it's automatically done. You don't even have to do anything.
So that's a huge win for a lot of people.
Speaking of hoops to jump through, probation and probation reform.
Mm-hmm.
838 is a complicated piece of legislation.
It is.
And people have spun it all sorts of ways. But before we even get into that, we have about 5 minutes left. I mean, what is the basic problem with probation as it existed before 838?
So the problem, one, is that any interaction with law enforcement could result in a technical violation. A technical violation could result in you being reincarcerated. So something as simple as being pulled over, not for a DUI, but for running a stop sign, making a U-turn, all of those things, could get you a technical violation and get you back in prison. What this bill does, and it's been a work for 5 years to get us there, and lots of people have worked on it. This particular piece of legislation, we worked on Senator Anthony Williams, who is my state senator and represents parts of my district. He was we worked with him on this as well. The bill stops that from happening, and the presumption changes.
Okay,
and this is huge, and this is why this is major for us. The presumption is now that you're not going to be sent to prison unless it's a new crime. So if you're on probation and you get into an assault or you're still committing crimes, that's something different. But for these type of technical violations, the presumption is that you're not going back. And therefore, the judge and the district attorney's office, they have to prove.
The burden is on the judge, you're
yes,
saying.
Yes, that is huge. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just the shifting of that burden is major. And the amount of time that you can stay incarcerated is also prescribed in the legislation based off of how many violations you may have had.
Okay. One of the things I saw that it also brings you up pro- for a probation review every couple years for misdemeanors, and 4 years every 4 years for felonies, all those things. So it seems like it would shorten the time that you're on probation generally. But at the same time, there are critics, and we heard the good things, but the ACLU, major critic of this legislation, they say it actually makes the probation worse, that it would create administrative probation where people who couldn't pay restitution or something like that, who've completed all the requirements of supervision, are in this limbo. Your response to the criticism?
Well, my response to the criticism is the same way that I responded to criticism when they talked about clean slate the first time, that it didn't do enough and didn't go far enough. I would agree that the probation bill that we passed didn't go as far as many of us would like to. I mean, if you want to see how far I wanted to go, look up House Bill 1555. I would consider that where we wanted to go. But, you know, we don't control both chambers in the General Assembly, and therefore consensus has to be, you have to come to consensus to get things done. We made a historic first step in reforming the probation system here in the Commonwealth. But as Senator Lisa Baker said, who is a Republican, not from Philadelphia, she even herself said that she wanted to get more done on the issue. And I'm committed to getting more done as well. So, you know,
what's the next more? We have about 15, 20 seconds.
We cut caps. Like, there should be
the amount of time you could
be on probation. We should be doing caps. And there's other nuances in the bill that we should be fixing and giving more definitive answers on things. Is it going to happen tomorrow? No. But, you know, in the world of criminal justice reform with the legislature, you have to prove that the world is not going to come to an end and that it's not going to fall apart. And then you come back and you get more done.
That is PA State Rep Jordan Harris, serving the 186th District, parts of Philadelphia, and Majority Chair of the House Appropriations Committee. Thank you so much, Representative Harris, for joining us today on Studio 2.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up next, we're talking about Pope Francis.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolf-Minert.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. The Vatican announced this week that priests can bless same-sex couples, a significant shift in how the Catholic Church approaches LGBTQ plus people. To be clear, the church has not changed its position on the union or marriage of same-sex couples, but still, Pope Francis's announcement has people split. Many see it as a landmark decision that could lead to more acceptance in the church. Others are deeply skeptical and say the change goes against Catholic beliefs.
This is not the first time Pope Francis has stirred the papal pot. At his weekly blessing last week, he called Israel's actions against civilians in Gaza terrorism. Earlier this year, he took aim at gas and oil companies, expressing urgent concern about the climate crisis. He continues to receive hostility from his most vocal critics, especially within the Vatican, and applause from others who want to see change in the church. Joining us now is Rocco Palmo. He is a Philadelphia-based Catholic journalist and editor of the website Whispers in the Loggia. Rocco Palmo, welcome to Studio 2.
Thanks, Avi. Thanks, Sherry. Happy holidays to you both.
Happy holidays to you, too. And friends, we know that there are a lot of strong opinions about changes in the church and about Pope Francis's leadership. What do you think? Chime in. We want your calls. The number is 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. And so, Rocco, I want to start with some very basics regarding this formal approval by the Pope to bless same-sex couples. It's been viewed as the Pope's most permissive decree to date when it comes to LGBTQ plus people. But talk about the parameters. What can priests and other leaders in the church do today that they couldn't or didn't know whether or not they could do before this announcement?
Well, Sherry, I think in terms of practice, you know, a lot of this is going to shake itself out depending on the place, depending on an individual priest. So, but you know, the parameters the Vatican set, and they basically said in this 10-page document, 5,000 word or on Monday, which came with no prior announcement or inkling whatsoever. Normally a document like this is heralded several days in advance and there's a big press conference. Here it just dropped out of nowhere and there went everybody's week before Christmas. But especially priests, I know. But anyway, you know, the parameters are that the church is teaching on marriage as being between one man and one woman for life in the context of a sacrament has not changed. The church believes that the sacraments come from God, and really, you know, and the document itself explicitly said the church's teaching on marriage remains firm. If there was a way for Francis that he could feel he could change it, he would have found a way, you know. But basically, you know, all kinds of items and people in different situations are blessed. For example, I once had my car blessed by a priest. We were going out to dinner. It happened to be raining. He used the rain on the top of the car as holy water. You know, that doesn't give the car a supernatural power. It doesn't say that, well, somebody's not going to drive drunk behind the wheel or God knows what, you know, things that happen in cars. So people seek blessings as a sign in general of God's closeness, of God's help, God's protection. You know, it's not a sacrament. It's a different thing. So in essence, priests are now permitted at their own discretion and judgment, you know, to bless what the church calls irregular couples, not just same-sex couples, but also, and this has been a even longer thicket of Catholic pastoral practice, straight couples who are civilly divorced and remarried without, who, you know, objectively, for the most part, can't receive the sacraments. But just as a way of saying, you know, bless them not as a union necessarily, but as people. You know, Francis always likes to say that, you know, in terms of how Catholic teaching relates to real people in real situations, you know, people are not a problem to be solved. There's something to be helped. Just this morning, he gave his annual Christmas speech, which is, you know, only half jokingly termed a lecture or a reprove of his senior staff. And it's made public.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, and even though he didn't mention Mundy's document directly, a lot of what he was saying kind of relates to the reaction and knowing.
Yeah, and we're going to get to that.
We're going to get to that,
Rocco. But real quick, let me just throw one line in, though.
Sure.
He said, the only time any of you can look down on someone is when you're helping them up. And that it summarizes the whole approach of these last 10 years, not just, again, beyond.
And I want to make sure we got a lot of ground to cover here, Rocco. So,
yes, we do.
So let's talk a little bit about the why. You mentioned that this announcement was made not in the typical fashion. Why was it made in this particular way? And why is Pope Francis doing this at all? I mean, is it driven by conviction? Is it about marketing the church to people who might not feel welcome in it now? I mean, what's the why?
The general sense of it, again, you know, as opposed to his two predecessors, who were, you know, kind of high academic theologians. Francis is the first pope, I think, in at least 150 years, who doesn't have some sort of academic doctorate. You know, I mean, his doctorate is from, as he would probably say, or we would say in English, the school of hard knocks, you know, real people in real situations. And, you know, a major emphasis, and again, this is someone who hasn't worked or studied in Rome before becoming the Bishop of Rome, the Pope. So, you know, his whole concept of the church is, you know, because, again, under his predecessors and always a steady stream of documents coming out of the Vatican, they have not related so well to real people in real situations. They've been perfect classical theology. And Francis comes from a, you know, he's the first Italian pope we've had, too, in 50 years. And that sense of Italian chaos.
He's from Argentina.
Life,
yeah.
But he's full-blooded Italian. His parents came over on the boat. And so that sense of migration, which also plays much into his social teaching, but just the sense of the church needing to be more of a family and less of what he calls a customs house, or what we would say in American English as a country club. You know, it's not a place where you're supposed to make people apply and have them check boxes and be able to reject them. You know, again, people are not a problem to be solved. There's something to be helped. And he's someone who's lived his life in, you know, the real world. And he talked about reality again this morning a lot in that speech, basically saying you can't, you know, act as if we're in the 1700s and you know, everyone, it's just, that's not the way the world works now. And the church has to respond in kind.
Yeah. And if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Rocco Palmo. He is a Philadelphia-based Catholic journalist. We're talking about the Pope's recent decree that came out this week allowing priests to formally bless same-sex couples. And if you want to chime in, the number is 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. We got an email from Jim who says this move is not that progressive. They're not saying gay people can get married. They are just blessing them. I want to talk about this whole idea because there's been a number of things that on the surface seem progressive, but may not necessarily be. And this recently, the Pope made clear that transgender people could be baptized, serve as godparents and witnesses in church ceremonies. The Pope has also spoken out against laws criminalizing LGBTQ plus people, calling them an injustice and a sin. Can you talk a bit about some of these shifts and why some people are calling it extremely progressive, but then other folks are saying, you know, this really isn't that big of a move?
Well, I think anyone who's looking for, you know, like a full bore sanction of same-sex marriage and allowing priests to bless it, you know, I mean, we're looking in the context, you know, that kind of thought would be in the context of American society right now as it is. You have to remember, Cherry, this is a 1.4 billion member global church. And just this move alone has already, you know, increased the active and, you know, some would say belligerent resistance and dissent to Francis, not just among the usual suspects of, you know, sudden dissenters, which are, you know, kind of the right wing here in the U.S., but also, too, in parts of sub-Saharan Africa, in parts of Eastern Europe. There's already been, you know, and again, this document, even though the Pope didn't personally issue it, he approved its issuance, but it's called a Declaration of the Office for the Doctrine of the Faith. This is a binding statement for Catholics, at least those who profess to be in communion with the Pope, which is the, you know, sine qua non of being Catholic. So, you know, it may not be progressive enough for folks in our cultural context, but if anything, you've already had organized groups of priests, sometimes even of bishops already in other parts of the world saying this is inadmissible in terms of the Catholic faith, which is a shocking breach from the Pope.
Yeah, Rocco, can we talk a little bit about the political factions within the church right now? Give us the lay of the land. Where on sort of in what faction or to what faction does Pope Francis belong, and what does the opposition look like?
Well, you know, I think factions can sometimes be overblown.
Okay. Is that too reductive? I mean, how would you describe it?
It's a convenient, easy shorthand. And interestingly enough, this morning, you know, in his speech to his top advisors, you know, he said, you know, now he's talking in the context of Vatican II, the major global meeting of bishops 60 years ago that opened the church to the world. He said, you know, people are still debating the division. And this is a direct quote. Between progressives and conservatives, but that is not the difference. The real central difference is between lovers of Jesus and of the faith and those who have lost their passion for it. That is the difference. Only those who love can move forward. And again, he did not mention Monday's document, but given the controversy, he knew it would be read as a reference to that. And it goes back even 10 years ago. He said, you know, for folks, there was the first Vatican meeting on families, which part of which was the World Meeting of Families when Francis came here to Philly in 2015. Mm-hmm. But he closed that meeting weeks after his visit here by saying, you know, because folks were talking about LGBTQ outreach and the need for an amplified one, and you have pushback again from other parts of the world. He said, you know, because they would say, oh, you know, accommodating LGBTQ is a scandal. He said the real scandal is a failure to love.
Yeah.
And for the church to show that love concretely to people. So now, again, the Pope can do whatever. Pope has essentially absolute power in the church. You know, Catholics see him as the successor to St. Peter, the first of the apostles, to whom Jesus in the Gospels gave the power to bind and loose however he saw fit. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven is the line. That's why the Pope is should be held normally in awe by Catholics. But now, you know, all of a sudden, the people who champion papal authority and aggressive papal authority through John Paul and Benedict have suddenly become minimalists of papal authority and said, oh, no, the Pope has to work between these lines, which is a change.
Yeah, and we got this email from Ted who says, Francis says to keep ideology out of the church, focus on our faith. But with the statements and making these changes, I think he is inserting his own ideology. Does it make sense? That's the email that we got from Ted. I want to zoom out a bit and talk about, you know, membership in the church, because like many organized religions, I mean, membership has decreased. In the 1970s, about 27%, nearly 30% of American adults were Catholic. That number, depending on which report you look at, is down to around anywhere from 21 to as low as 17% in America now. A lot of pews are empty. You know, churches are losing folks every single day. Given this context, is the Pope trying to bring people who may have felt excluded back into the fold? And I say this from a point of someone who grew up as Catholic and have seen the numbers go down.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, Cherry, even here in our own backyard, when I was growing up, you know, 20, 30 years ago, the Archdiocese of Philadelphia had 1.5 million Catholics. Now it's at barely a million. And that's the official number from the diocese. In terms of reality, it's probably less. So we've seen a drop of a third in our own backyard. Mm. But, you know, again, this document Monday, interestingly, you know, again, for the folks, for this resistance the Pope's getting, for Ted, you know, who's claiming that this is the Pope's, a matter of the Pope's ideology. You know, again, anyone who's ideologizing this or trying to see this as some sort of institutional thing, if anything, all the institutions of the church were told to stay out of it. This is a matter between a priest and people spontaneously, informally. Nothing that resembles a wedding can be, you know, that is specifically banned, you know, here. But there was a line in the document that said, people who come for blessings, by and large, are people who seek God's goodness and closeness and mercy. It said, and that is not a small thing in today's world, you know, which basically refers to, again, in the world in which we live, you know, and but also, too, it, all this, you know, once upon a time, any document that referred to, you know, the Vatican wouldn't use the term gays 5 years ago in an official document or same, you know, but it would, you know, there would always be the codicil that homosexuality or homosexual acts are, quote unquote, intrinsically disordered.
But do you think, Rocco, but do you think this is about, on some level, marketing the church to people, increasing the numbers?
Oh, I wouldn't put it that crudely, Avi, but, you know, if anything, just, again, for, you know, in terms of families, in terms of people, and not looking at, you know, number blocks, for practically every Catholic who still remains practicing in the church, and so many who are no longer practicing, you know, the whether personally is an LGBTQ person or someone who is related to one, knows one, cares for one, loves one, this issue has become an obstacle to actual faith in Jesus Christ and in the Catholic Church. And, you know, if this is not a top tier issue, when Catholics say the creed on Sunday, the formal statement of belief that dates back 1800 years, there's nothing about gays or lesbians. There's nothing about abortion. There's nothing about the issues that are seen as the litmus tests, you know, of today's culture wars. It's about believing in God, believing in the church, and believing in the authority of the church, which is, you know, has now come to this step. And and again, as Francis said, only those who love, and, you know, his predecessor, Pope Benedict, who was always seen as a reactionary, his first major message to the world was God is love.
And I gotta,
so it's actually in a continuity there.
And I have to ask you this. The Pope recently said, let us remain vigilant against rigid ideological positions that often, under the guise of good intentions, separate us from reality and prevent us from moving forward. It seems to me that Pope Francis is trying to thread the needle between opening the doors and keeping true to the doctrine. How are the more conservative Catholics handling this? Because a lot of folks, you know, like you just said, they've built a lot around this belief that, you know, same-sex marriage, all that stuff is just wrong, wrong, wrong. And now you see this opening of the door, this welcoming in. Just sort of how do you think the Pope is doing threading this needle?
Well, it's interesting, Cherry, because, again, as I said, over the last couple of days, and not just from here in the States or the English speaking world, but, you know, again, parts of sub-Saharan Africa, parts of Eastern Europe, you have seen already. And again, it's the week before Christmas. This is not the quietest time of year for priests or church people, but you've already seen groups. I think there was a group of 500 priests in Britain today who said that this is not admissible in the life of the church, and you know, they want nothing to do with it. Again, that kind of defiance, that kind of open, obstinate defiance toward a formal declaration from the Vatican is shocking.
And a quick follow-up, because there's some factions that have even called for his resignation. Is that even possible?
Well, he can do whatever he wants. But, you know, the more interesting tact that some folks on the right say is that basically the Pope has put himself into heresy with things like this, which means he is automatically disqualified from being Pope and that none of his actions are valid. You know, it's funny how a lot of this mirrors the dynamic of current American politics.
Sure does, yeah.
I think the issue is, and on all sides of the coin, in terms of reaction, that, you know, our own culture has a weakness that people have made politics their religion and have turned their faith into politics. And you know, we you know, especially this time of year when we hopefully will or should be with our families, and even for all the differences in those families, kind of you know, celebrating what we have and the blessing of each other, that we all kind of just, everybody would do well to take a step back and realize what's really important in life.
We are speaking with Rocco Palmo, editor of Whispers in the Loggia, talking about the state of the Catholic Church. You can give us a call, 888-477-9499. We have about 5 minutes left in this segment. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. And I want to read in another email comment, this one from Arlene. I believe referring to what we were talking about earlier, it is the smallest of reforms made in a 2,000-year-old institution. I find the refusal to recognize the intellectual abilities and spiritual gifts of women by refusing them to be leaders in the church a slap in the face to all womankind. And yes, I take it personally. Rocco, I'm using that email as a springboard to ask about what other frontiers might open up in this dispute between the traditionalists and Pope Francis and his allies. We talked about LGBTQ plus acceptance. What else is out there that could be a tension point in the coming years?
Well, it's already begun, Avi. It's actually been going on for some years. But I mean, one thing Francis has said coming in, and again, especially in an institution heavy, very traditional list diocese like Philadelphia, you know, which once had the greatest collection of Catholic institutions of any diocese in the world 100 years ago, you know, the emphasis has been on, you know, priesthood means power. And that has both perverted the priesthood and perverted the church. And Francis himself, you know, himself is trying to loosen that up, you know. And part of the reason I think, you know, we see the push for women's ordination and everything is that erroneous conflation of priesthood with power. If anything, you know, the teaching of the church says that by baptism, all of us, male, female, whatever our age, have a share in what's called the royal priesthood, or the, you know, the dignity of Christ. So Francis has already started opening up positions in the Vatican that were previously held by archbishops or, you know, cardinals even, to women, whether they be what we call religious women, most people would know them as nuns or sisters, or to lay women. I mean, the deputy foreign minister, which always used to be a high ranking Monsignor, was until recently a lay woman. You know, part of the vehicle for a lot of the Pope's changes is what's called the Synod of Bishops. It's a global gathering of, they used to be all bishops, but in its first session under this October of the current issue, if you will, the Pope opened it up to make it more deliberative, named a religious woman as the number two in the office that runs it, but also named 70 lay people from around the world. You see, when we talk about, you know, women in orders, it's not just a question of women, it's a question of even lay men having, you know, because canon law until now has stated that jurisdiction can only be exercised by a priest. Francis said, no, it comes from the job that the bishop, the Pope, gives you. So a layman is already now holding a cardinal's job in the Vatican. Now, whether it was a man or a woman, the most significant fact is it's a layperson, someone who has a family. So we're going to be seeing more of that next year. But the Pope really wants all of this to come to diocesan level, where what's called, like, for example, the vicar general, the COO of a diocese. This is a $5 billion corporation here in this archdiocese. Can end up being run by a layperson.
And let me just throw in here, because we only have about a minute and a half left. Got to ask you, I mean, the Pope just had a birthday. He's 87 years old, 10 years into his papacy.
Yes.
Does he have enough time realistically to solidify his vision, his more inclusive vision for the church, and to ensure that he has enough folks, you know, in power to choose his successor, someone who will continue that vision?
Yeah.
Well, Cherry, he is speeding up. You know, he's had a lot of health scares. I mean, he wanted one of his big causes that he didn't get to carry up. He wanted to make the COP28, the climate change conference in Dubai, earlier this month. But because he had bronchitis, the doctors told him not to make the trip, which was very. So his health is a very open question. But in the meantime, he's chosen almost 70% of the cardinals who will elect his successor. In contrast to times past, they don't come from the big cities of the world, the Viennas, the Torontos, the Sydneys. They come from places like Papua New Guinea and Tonga, and here in the United States, San Diego, and, they come from what he calls the peripheries of the church, where he feels, you know, Catholic populations are smaller but more vibrant. Hmm. But the thing is, the problem is they don't really know each other too well, and they can't make a mistake the election of a successor, because once you hand the keys over, I talked about the keys of the kingdom earlier, you can't take them back.
Cannot take them back. Well, Rocco Palmo, thank you so much for joining us on Studio 2 today. Rocco is a Philly-based Catholic journalist and editor of the website Whispers in the Loggia. Rocco, really appreciate the time.
Anytime, guys. Happy holidays. Enjoy it.
And thanks to Adele, who tried to get in on the call. She says, judge not, lest ye be judged. Coming up.
All right. Words to live by.
Words
from
to live by.
Okay.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine. What's next?
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. 2023, a lot of breaking news. Mm-hmm. Cherry, when you think about it, we covered a ton of local stories since we've been on the air since just March.
I know. We went from major elections to protests, pop culture, even sports. We chose a new mayor. Somebody escaped from prison. Remember that? And he was on the loose. There was a clean water scare. The Phillies went pretty far this season. There was just so much to talk about, Avi. Just so much.
A lot.
Yeah.
And we have some pretty cool students here at WHYY. They come to our studios after school, learn how to interview, produce news pieces and radio stories, and they work on a podcast called Spoken Youth. And today, Cherry, they put together something special for us.
Ooh.
These high schoolers reflected on the stories that were most important to them this year, and they tell us why.
Hey there, it's Amelia from Spoken Youth. I'm here with Samaya and Zen.
Hello.
Hi there.
This is 2023 Through Our Eyes.
One of the biggest stories of the year was former President Trump's indictment. President Trump was and is the only president, current and former, to be criminally indicted and still be the GOP frontrunner for the 2024 presidency. It just speaks to where the nation is at the moment.
A lot of the youth vote is just meh about Biden, and especially his age.
You have to choose which one would you rather have. Someone who could not be trustworthy with all these criminal charges versus someone who may not be the most up to date on what's going on, so may not represent your values accurately in like the highest position you can have in this country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's also crazy to think about the fact that in many states, if you've been found guilty of a federal crime, you can no longer vote. But in this country, because there's nothing in the Constitution that directly states against it, you can still run for president even after being criminally indicted.
You can run for president from prison.
Yeah.
As teens in high school, we're just a couple years away from voting. Like, Is this a message that we want to be sending to the world?
Our next story is
the Israel-Hamas war. On October 7th, Hamas attacked Israel, and things changed all over the world. When I go to synagogue, it's something that hangs in the air everywhere, all the time. People wear a little piece of ribbon, a blue ribbon, pinned to their lapel.
It's very disheartening to see what's happening on the other side of the world. You would think humans have gotten past the need to commit this level of violence against another group of humans, but we're still here in 2023 seeing this.
I don't know if I should say anything at all, and I see there's a lot of people posting on Instagram like their viewpoints, like pro-Palestine or pro-ceasefire, pro-Israel, and I don't personally post anything like that. I am just watching and seeing what's going on and trying to understand, but at the same time I can't really fully understand.
It's a lot. It's overwhelming.
SAG-AFTRA went on strike on July 14th. It was the first strike they've done since 1980, and it ended on November 9th.
The strike that happened, it really hit me hard for both the writers and the actors, because those were both industries that I've wanted to go into. And these big businesses like Disney and Comcast and Fox, they hold the money from the people who are making them the most money. The writers, the actors, you cannot produce a show without either of them. You can't produce a movie without either of them.
And this year has just been full of various strikes. WGA and the UAW, the United Auto Workers, and so many more. And I think it's really cool. Like, I think it's about time.
I agree.
Yeah.
By the way, employees at WHYY are members of SAG-AFTRA, but they were not affiliated with the strike.
While not as politically important, Taylor Swift being made Person of the Year and achieving billionaire status, I enjoy her music. I do. I was never going to go to the Eras Tour.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. I mean, my favorite band is the Beatles. Been listening to a lot of The Doors, Donovan, Rolling Stones lately.
Honestly, the only reason I really know her music is because when we were growing up, a couple of her songs would play on the radio all the time. I think it's interesting because it could be a testament to the power and influence of music. A large majority of the population's attitude towards a billionaire who does music versus a billionaire who's the CEO of a tech company is very different. And I think music is something people connect to, so they feel closer to her, so they feel like connected to her in some way and want to support her. Hailey Bailey was casted as Ariel in the new live-action Little Mermaid this year. The reason she was acted wasn't just because she was African-American and popular, it was because she fit the role of the character. I thought all the criticism was unwarranted because mermaids are a fictional race. They can look like anybody. So people going after her just because they think that the Disney's trying to be woke in this situation, I feel like is not accurate.
Representation matters. When my little cousin saw Hailey Bailey as Ariel in a commercial for The Little Mermaid, she got so excited. Like, she was jumping up and down, bouncing off the walls in a way that I've never been excited for a movie. And it's super important for people to be able to see themselves on the big screen and not in a way that it's the comedic relief character or the side character or the antagonist, but as the main titular character.
I agree.
Thanks for listening. I'm Amelia.
I'm Samaya.
And I'm Zen.
And this is Spoken Youth. These were our top stories for 2023.
All right, that's it. 2024, they're hosting the show.
I know.
They could do it. They could do it start to finish. Spoken Youth, by the way, is made in partnership with WHYY's Pathways to Media Careers. Wonderfully done.
So much charisma. I just loved hearing their voices and knowing that they're paying attention to the news. Our future is in good hands.
They're watching. They're listening. And you all listened this year.
Yes.
We really want to
thank
you.
So
this is
much.
Our last live show of the year. We've got some special programming lined up for next week already. But it's been a pleasure being on this journey with you, Cherry, and with our audience. And we look forward to much, much more in 2024.
Can't wait. And that is it for us today, friends. For more Studio 2, you can follow WHYY on all social platforms and download the show wherever you get your podcasts. And we could not do any of this without our producers, Debbie Builder, Paige Murray Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Charlie Kyer engineered today's program. Joan Isabella is the General Manager of Audio here at WHYY. And from Studio 2 at WHYY, I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Thank you for joining us. Happy holidays to you and yours.